Welcome to the 10-12, the podcast that covers all 10 teams in the Big 12 Conference. Thank you for joining us on a Monday. I am your host, Philip Slavin, as always. And as always on a Monday, joining me here today, Andy Mitz.
How's it going? Good to be here. Glad I didn't have to watch Kansas lose this weekend.
You know what? Sometimes no football is good football, or at least in the case of Kansas fans. So that's a win.
Agreed.
Yeah. And basketball season just a week away. Just a week away or so. Jamie Steyer.
Basketball season. Now you're speaking my language.
That's literally the only reason we brought Jamie on, was to talk basketball. We just had to put up with her through football season.
Muddling through.
She's a joy. Yes. Yeah. And joining us today, a very special guest, thanks to the fact that the Dallas Cowboys are on a bye week, Ari Timken, whose voice you can hear covering the Dallas Cowboys, as well as talking Big 12 sports on Big 12 Radio on Sirius XM. Ari, welcome back, sir.
All the games that have been canceled in college football, how in the hell has Kansas not had any games canceled?
I know, seriously. It's like ridiculous. They've had a COVID list that's been like a mile long every single week. Like, they literally have a third of their roster on the did-not-dress list every week, and yet somehow they have managed to play all of them.
It's unbelievable.
I mean, I don't know. The one team that's like, we're fine taking a week off. Like, it's okay.
Yeah.
Like, we don't need to. Like, just, you know what? Forget
possible.
For just go ahead and give yourself a W. Like, it's fine, whoever we're playing this week.
It's
don't
the
just.
Thing.
Well, you know, thinking about it, they have so many young guys that they have to play anyway. So they're just like, we'll just let all the young guys play. Who cares?
Basically, call it a scrimmage every week.
Could be worse, though. We could have lost to Louisiana to open the season, you know, and not like a legit powerhouse like Coastal Carolina.
Exactly.
Or Arkansas State, who is, you know, has a losing record, so there's that as well.
Yeah, but there's nobody from Kansas State on the podcast today, so.
This is true, but I never have a problem.
Ari thought that he was coming on a roast today, so.
Yes. Did you not know that this is actually the roast of Jamie Steyer?
Oh, gosh. That's cool.
I've been waiting.
I don't know about that one.
No, we wouldn't waste the good off-season material for the middle of the season. Okay.
Oh, good point.
So we do have a couple of games to get through from this past Saturday. Obviously, we start off with Texas Tech and Baylor. Texas Tech getting another 1-point win.
Woohoo!
If ever that name better fit this matchup than think of it.
I've never seen Andy this happy about something in the entire time I've been on this podcast.
I actually tweeted about that like right after halftime started. I'm like, if ever there was a game to live up to the name, like, this is the game that's living up to the name. And then just hashtag butt bowl. Like, I didn't even actually say it in the tweet. I just used the hashtag.
I've just never seen you so excited about the word butt. That's what's really throwing
me. Oh, every year. This is my favorite non-Kansas game of the year in the Big 12 because it has the best name possible.
Yes. Okay, so honestly, only thing I really have to talk about with this is even in victory, I can find more ways to point out that Matt Wells is probably not a very good coach. It took them until this game and their previous kicker going 1-5 to go to the junior Jonathan Garibay, who went 4-for-4 in the game and helping Texas Tech win, including a game winner as the clock expired. He had like a 48-yarder and a 46-yarder in this game. Like, congratulations to Matt Wells. He basically tried to do the same thing he did in the TCU game, except like the way he managed the game, he got to kick it on not second down. They got the win. Congrats to Texas Tech in winning the battle for ninth place and eighth place in the Big 12 this year. Baylor will finish in ninth, Texas Tech in eighth because of this. But why did it take them so long to find the field goal kicker who is actually able to kick field goals? It's one thing when it takes you a while to figure out that the backup quarterback is the better quarterback, but we're talking kickers here. Like, surely, come on, 4-for-4 versus 1-5. I mean, something had to have been going on in practice. No,
it feels like something that's less arbitrary. Like, either you make it or you don't.
Especially given how bad they had been there. But let's just not overlook the two plays that won them this game. Two defensive plays: Colin Schooler just absolutely stuffing Connor Brewer on third goal.
Wow,
holy
yeah.
cow! And then the breakup by Zach McPherson on third down that got the ball back to Texas Tech. But, I mean, to your point, they kind of stole the victory from the jaws of defeat there.
Baylor went into the fourth quarter with a 23-12 lead and lost.
And they're 20-6 in the second half.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, and honestly, if you think about it, like, Garibay was really the all-around MVP because, you know, he was able to pin them deep because he punted as well. He punted five times. and pinned them deep so many times, and Baylor's offense was having problems all game long, and the fact that they had to drive 85 to 90 yards on pretty much every drive that they had, you know, where Texas Tech hadn't scored, like, that was huge for them. And so Garibay not only scored 12 points of his own on his kicks, but he also, like, panned Baylor deep to make it really hard for them to be able to actually do anything.
Crazy. Well, as somebody said, that was enough butt stuff, but to me, I will take the butt bowl once in football and twice in basketball every year, so I look forward to the basketball games. Those should actually be fun to watch between two good basketball programs. That's enough basketball talk. The other game on Saturday is the one we need to talk about a little bit more. Props to West Virginia getting a nice win over TCU on Saturday. The loss to Texas Tech continues to look more and more weird. I've reached the point with West Virginia where the defense is good enough. If they had a good quarterback, they probably would have beaten Texas. They definitely would have beaten Texas Tech, and they might have beaten Oklahoma State. So just to rub some salt in the wounds for West Virginia fans, put Will Grier on this team, and they're undefeated at this point, 8-0. Does that seem like a fair guesstimate? Maybe. I don't know. Maybe that's history written. But congrats to West Virginia. Defense remains awesome. Anybody have any thoughts on West Virginia before we move on to the first big topic at hand?
It's hard to win as many games in the Big 12 as West Virginia has with a good defense and a good running game. Like, that's usually any other year, you're not going to win many games doing that, and that's what they've done this year. And I don't think it's going to get them wins against Oklahoma or Iowa State down the stretch this season, but no, I mean, they dominate on defense, and we'll see how dominating they can be against, you know, this explosive Oklahoma offense.
Yeah, it's also kind of weird in, like, the year of COVID where you wouldn't think home field advantage would matter very much. They are undefeated at home and have not won a game on the road, which is, like, the strangest thing in the strangest season that we've ever had.
It is. It does seem, though, like a major advantage with or without fans for them, just because of the geographical side of things.
It is a weird travel out there. It really is.
Yeah.
Like, having been there for the first time last year, I definitely saw why people talk about it and how different it is, just because it's such a different place than anywhere else. So, I mean, obviously teams aren't going out and doing anything real exciting, but it takes you out of your comfort zone a little bit, and it is a longer trip than pretty much anywhere else you're going to go. It's a really kind of weird experience.
That's kind of normal, though, right? There's not really anything exciting to do out in West Virginia. Look, every other Big 12 fan base is mad at me already. I might as well, you know, throw West Virginia there as well.
Hey, drink moonshine, burn couches. I don't know a better way to spend a Saturday night in the mountains.
It's gorgeous. It's got beautiful mountains. I mean, it's the exact opposite topography of the state of Kansas, Andy, you know? It's like not as flat as...
Oh, I know. I used to live out in Virginia, and I would drive through there all the time. So, yeah, no, I completely understand.
But all that they're two different states, Andy.
I know. But whenever I come back to visit Kansas, I have to drive through West Virginia to do it. And that's
about it. Kidding.
So. West Virginia and Virginia aren't the same place? I thought one
They're
was
not.
Just the west side of
so
the...
So did I. Oh. So did I.
Oh, who gosh. Knew? We're going to have so many mad tweets to this episode.
I love it. Awesome. I love West Virginia. They know it.
Yeah.
It's fine.
Dominant defense.
Yes. Oh, gosh. And Letty Brown. Can we just... Letty Brown.
Okay, who's the second best running back in the Big 12?
After Breece Hall... I mean, it's between him, Chuba, and Deuce Vaughn. I don't think it's Deuce
right.
Vaughn.
I don't
because
think
Deuce Vaughn's
either.
More of a, like, multi-purpose weapon than just a running back.
And he's kind of topped out, it seems like. Maybe not.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So it's between Letty and Chuba?
I think it's Letty Brown, which is crazy, considering
it
how dominant
be.
Chuba was last year.
Although, I don't know. If you believe ESPN, he's actually the best running back in the Big 12, because we all know that Breece Hall plays for Iowa.
That's correct. That's correct.
And Jamie is giving me Jamie's giving me the side eye.
I can't say any more than I already had. It just hurts me a little bit to talk, but I'm used to it.
It's weird. People do the same thing for me. It's like, you went to Kansas State, right? It's like, wouldn't Kansas be the more known one nationally? Like, people always
sport,
like,
what sport are we talking about? Football or basketball?
Yes.
Okay. So let's have the very difficult conversation that we have to have. TCU managed to score 6 points on Saturday. TCU on offense, bad again. And that's kind of been the story of TCU, not just this season, but for the last few seasons. I mean, it continues to be a situation of too many cooks in the kitchen. We've got Doug Meacham back, who's been in and out of there. We've got Sonny Cumbie, who's there and his role changes all the time. Now Jerry Kill is some sort of advisory role. And the TCU offense, and yes, full credit to the fact that the offensive line has not been good, but that might also be in part to the fact that their offensive line coach, I don't believe, is an actual offensive line coach. He's a guy who coached other things and is now coaching the offensive line. And if there's any position you should have a specialist at, it's offensive line. But the TCU offense continues to be, bad is an understatement. Putrid is more accurate. And I'm not going to blame the quarterback because I still think that Duggan is a good quarterback. I think he's having to deal with a really bad offense. And look, West Virginia's got a really good defense. But if you're TCU, you should be able to do more than 6 points. My big overarching theme here with TCU is this. I'm never someone who wants to go on a show and say you should fire a head coach unless there's off-the-field issues. And I mean, you know, Hugh Freeze-level kinds of things. But I think it's time we had the conversation that this might be it for Gary Patterson. And it might be time for him to either retire or for he and the school to have a mutual parting of ways. Because, look, I know they went 11-3 in 2017 and got to the Big 12 title game, and that was great. That's not the norm anymore. It's not down year, up year. It's now the outlier. Like, you've had four mediocre or bad seasons with one nice one in between. And honestly, you could argue since they got to the Big 12, and if you want to say, well, the first few years in the Big 12, they had to build up their roster to compete in the Big 12, that's fine. But let's run through the records they've had since TCU joined the Big 12. 7-6, 4-8, 12-1, 11-2, and full credit, that 12-1 team should have been in the playoff. 6-7, 11-3, 7-6, 5-7, and they are currently 3-4 in the Big 12 this year. They do have Kansas left on the schedule, but they also have Oklahoma State left on the schedule. Whoever wants to kind of go first here, feel free to agree, disagree, what you think. But, I mean, Gary has done amazing things at TCU. TCU is on the map because of Gary Patterson. But you cannot continue to keep someone employed in a position based off of just past performance from years ago and keep hoping that something will change when at this point he has proven or shown no ability to make it change or to make the moves necessary to make it change.
I've been told I talk too much, so I'm going to let someone else jump in first.
It's funny. We all were silent and then all jumped at the same time. I mean,
that's
tough.
That's podcasting.
Yeah. You mentioned it. You know, this is a historically great coach. You know, it's a coach that got this program into the Big 12. I mean, that's an unbelievable accomplishment for him. And it's unparalleled seemingly to go that level of football to the Big 12. And I think you documented it. You know, they haven't been great since joining the Big 12, the 1 year with 12-1 season, but it's hard to be really good consistently playing at this level. Just ask Kansas, who's probably more of an FCS program at this point and has been for the last 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 years. But I guess I'm still not there, you know, because I just have Andy's counting 10, 11. It's been a long time since
that's really insulting to FCS programs because North Dakota
honestly
State
would beat
Kansas soundly.
Well, I didn't say a good FCS program. You just
lump them all into program. One room. Like, come on.
Kansas has beaten some FCS teams, so they at least can hang on. So some.
Not North Dakota State. So I agree with the too many cooks in the kitchen. Just fire Sonny Cumbie and bring in Jerry Kill. I don't really understand that. I hate the idea of, you know, I've got an offensive coordinator and I bring in somebody to go on top of him. That never works out. I just think they can't protect the quarterback and they're not good defensively, which obviously falls in Gary Patterson. But they just give up far too many big plays. It's just unbelievable. I mean, even in this game, you know, you wouldn't think West Virginia scores 24 points. It was about the big play, but it was. Letty Brown, long runs that just killed them. I mean, in every game, that's what it's been. And so, I mean, when you have a defense that just hemorrhages big plays and you have an offense that doesn't really know what it is or what it has, then this is what you have. I mean, I put a lot of it on coaching. It's hard not to. It's hard not to, especially on offense. It's like, who's your best running back? We saw Darlon Barlow and Zachary Evans emerge last week. And then this week, it's like, who's this guy now? Like, they just don't have enough weapons. But I just think it starts with their offensive line. You mentioned it's been bad all year. So maybe I should be there, Philip, but I guess I've just, for me, Patterson's bought enough equity over the years that I still think they have a lot of pieces there that will be back next year that, I don't know, maybe I'm buying into the hype, but I mean, Duggan doesn't seem that bad, and I don't attribute a lot of their failures this year to Duggan. Maybe I should, but the offense, I can't get over the offensive line and how hard it is to play quarterback when you're constantly under duress.
Go ahead, Jamie.
Okay, so logistically, coming into this season, my thought was always that obviously some schools will always fire their coach, you know, no matter what happens, but you better have a really, really good reason to, in this year, fire your coach, because let's think about the place you're going to be at financially. I don't know what his contract looks like, so I don't know what buyouts or anything like that looks like, but to hire a new coach, it's going to be a huge pain to go through any of that.
Well, and there's no firing Gary Patterson.
Yeah.
At this point, if you're TCU, you're right. Not, you can't fire him.
Right.
It's just not going to happen. They have a statue of him, you know? So.
But in general, and so then that obviously takes that out of the equation, but still, I mean, the issue is that we acknowledge that this is an abnormal year. Sure. Should you be better this year? Probably. Should you be better just overall if you're TCU because the school expects better? Yeah. But I just have a really hard time saying that this year is the breaking point for anyone who may be kind of on the fringe. So, yeah. I mean, in general, sure, maybe it would be worth consideration. For me, my opinion is that I think that people need to be given a lot more grace this year. However, do I think that that'll be the case? Absolutely not, because people are demanding, boosters are demanding. There's not a lot of, again, grace given in college athletics. But I just have a hard time saying that make or break year should be a year that in any given week you could have players out, you don't get a normal preseason. You know, any of that. Do I think that changes should be made as far as staffing and all that goes? Absolutely. Do I think that next year should be the make or break year for them potentially? Sure, fine. But I just have a really hard time for, especially someone in his position, for this to be the make or break year. It's just like, I mean, maybe give it another year is how I feel about it.
I mean, hold on to that. I get that thought, and I do. And if 2024 TCU was setting up to look like a year where it was setting up for 2021, I would understand that. But nothing about what we've seen from TCU this year makes me go, okay, they're building to next year and next year's the year. Now it feels like, okay, so now we're kind of, now 2021 will build to 2022 and hopefully that will work out and our quarterback won't be so beat up and broken from a lack of development that we won't have to move it. Like, I don't see anything, and haven't for the past few years at TCU, to get at this point, to have any belief that things are suddenly going to get better. A switch is going to get flipped as long as they keep doing things the way they keep doing them. It's kind of like D'Antoni was doing at Michigan State. I think that's the comp. You know, he literally took his coaching staff and just moved them all into new positions because he wouldn't fire anybody. Yeah. That kind of feels like what Gary's doing here at TCU now, is he's gotten to that point where he's being stubborn. He's going to stick with I'm pulling in more of my guys, more guys on my side, which is great if that works, but it's not working. And I understand this season is weird and it's COVID and it's hard to judge things fairly, but we're at the point in this season where the COVID excuse isn't as strong as it was, and we're not seeing TCU get any better. At this point, I mean, realistically, they've got Kansas. Okay, great. But we've seen them lose to Kansas before, and they've got Oklahoma State at home left on the schedule. 4-5 is best. At best, to me, that's 4-5. And I don't think they're going to lose to Kansas. I'm sorry, Kansas. I think Kansas is that bad this year. But You're 4-5. Thank goodness you escaped not having to play SMU at the beginning of the season, because that would have been a loss.
Oh gosh, that would have been horrible.
And now you look at TCU and you look into next year, and what gives you any faith other than, well, they've had down years and then up years again afterwards before. It's been so long since that has happened. You can't fall back on that anymore.
Yeah, the biggest problem for me is this reeks to me of the Kansas State situation before Bill Snyder left the first time, where he had been falling off and everybody was like, we need to do something. And they finally convinced him to leave. And then Ron Prince steps in and the bottom falls out entirely at that point. So like, I think what the problem here is that Gary Patterson doesn't want to leave. He thinks that he can get back to what he did. And that's why he brought Doug Meacham back this year. The problem, like trying to recreate that wonderful offense they had with Sonny Cumbie and Doug Meacham working together. But then he added, you know, Kill on top of that, which kind of completely killed any kind of rapport that they had going on there. But no pun intended, but intended. Anyway, but the main problem here is that TCU is afraid, I think, to even bring it up because they saw what happened to Kansas State when they got rid of Snyder, the guy that had built their program to where it was, that was the face of that program for so long. They don't want to go the Ron Prince direction like Kansas State did and then have to try to bring Gary Patterson back in a few years to hope that he can turn it around again. I'm like, they're in a very, very similar situation to where Kansas State was. And I think they're scared at this point to really, you know, actually evaluate the program and where they're at and try to come up with a real solution. Their thought is that, well, Bill Snyder was able to eventually turn it around. I mean, yeah, he left and then came back, but he was able to turn it around. So, I mean, I've got to think that Gary Patterson can do something similar. And it's just not working. He needs that wake-up call. Something needs to happen to change his approach because it's just not working. It's just getting worse.
I think it's really easy for us in podcast world and journalism world and sports world outside of fan bases and schools to make judgment calls like this. And it is. It's really easy. It has no effect on me outside of being a Big 12 fan and someone who actually wants to see TCU succeed because I enjoy it when they're good. But it's a hard decision to make, especially with someone who is literally has a statue. Like, it is not an easy move to make because there's that whole, like, well, what if we don't make the right hire? You cannot allow the fear of the wrong hire to dictate your decisions moving forward and force you to stick around with somebody far past what they've done. Because at a certain point, like what you've done in the past becomes further and further in the past and has less and less ability to benefit you in the future, the further it gets away. By the way, Patterson got a contract extension in 2017 to 2024. Nobody knows if he has a buyout or what it is because they're private universities. They don't have to release that information. They're not going to. And shout out to Parker, who basically said it doesn't exist. So look, to me, from the outsider looking in, like you're another – you come to next year, what do you do? And then you come to the next year, and then what do you – like. Unless he is willing to really make the staff moves necessary to change and adapt and get and fix this team, you're just going to see the same thing next year. And I just, do you really see Gary Patterson? If they are so scared to fire him, how are they going to even have the gall to go to him and say, you need to really make coaching staff changes to fix things? Like they're not. If they can't fire him, they're not going to tell him what to do in his program. He's been doing it for too long. And I don't necessarily buy the idea that you can't find a good coach to play. I'd be on the phone to Justin Wilcox at Cal immediately and doing everything I could to get him down to TCU. There are good coaches to hire to keep succeeding. You don't have to hire Ron Prince.
Yeah, no. Like, no, I was saying they're afraid that if they find a way to separate him from the university, I don't know what that would look like, but if they found a way for them to move on, the concern is that we orchestrated this so that we could move on, and then you hire the wrong guy. Because Ron Prince was supposed to be an up-and-coming coach at that point. Like, yeah, there was definitely some warning signs there, but I think every coach that you could theoretically hire at this point is going to have some sort of warning sign, and you just have to hope that, you know, what that is isn't going to end up being an issue. Like, there wasn't any clear indication that Ron Prince was going to flop the way that he did at Kansas State. And so that's what you really kind of have to worry about is that, and I'm not saying that they should find a way to move on from Gary Patterson, but they have to do something because the trajectory that they're on is just not working. You know, I don't want to see him go because I would like to see him be successful and decide when he wants to retire. But if he's going to continue to run the program into the ground because he's afraid to change things or unwilling to change things, then they've got to have a hard conversation somewhere and find some way to get through to him that changes have to be made. I don't know what the changes look like. I don't pretend to know enough to say what this is, the magic pill that's going to fix the TCU program right now, but they've got to do something, and it doesn't look like they're doing anything right now.
The last thing I'll add to this, I would say, is you go back, look at their last three seasons, and you can really draw a straight line between some issues at quarterback. I mean, go back to the year that they won the Cheez-It Bowl in one of the worst games ever. And it was like, I mean, they just had injuries and guys transfer out and just bad luck at quarterback. I mean, they were on their like sixth quarterback at that point. And then last year, you get a true freshman in Duggan. You know, you try to alternate between Delton, but, you know, you did what you could with Duggan. And then, you know, who knows how much what Doug was able to do this offseason when it was like, we weren't even sure he was going to play football again when the heart condition was found out. So the fact that he, you know, he got ready the time that he did, again, we don't really know the work that went in, and maybe he, you know, worked through it, but it certainly seemed like, you know, there was a lot of unknowns on his availability and future, and mixed in with the pandemic, like how much was he able to train and get ready for the season. So maybe I'm making excuses, but I also see issues at quarterback. And now this year, beyond the issue with quarterback coming in, again, just the bad offensive line, which is just a major struggle for, you know, for any team, obviously.
Yeah, fair enough. Look, if you're a TCU fan and you're having a hard time, and look, maybe you'd like to pour yourself a glass of something strong to help you get through the week, might I suggest hiding it in a cup of Lazy Fair coffee. Ethically sourced beans from around the world, roasted right in the heart of Big 12 country. They got flavors for everyone. This is really, really good cup of coffee, as Jamie herself can vouch, and myself can vouch as well. Go to lazyfaircoffee.com, LazyFair coffee. Use the promo code 1012, get 10% off your order. It's a really good deal, especially if you live in DFW. You get free delivery in the DFW area because, of course, they're roasting in DFW, so it's not really that far. Pretty sure you've got someone on your holiday shopping list who's a big coffee snob, a big coffee fan. This is the right bean for them. Whether you go with the Tanzania Light, the Honduran Sunrise, the Good Morning Vietnam. If you've got someone who likes something that's a little bit lighter, I believe that the description of the Cafe New Guinea is basically, it's like tea, but on crack. Like supercharged tea. You want some supercharged tea, something light, fruity, but it's going to give you a kick in the pants? Cafe New Guinea is for you. So, lazyfaircoffee.com, L-A-Z-Y.
But I don't want crack, Phil.
No, I wouldn't suggest anyone does crack. At least. Okay. I don't.
To clarify, Tensil Podcast is anti-crack.
Yeah, well, I am. Let's just, crack is whack, I believe is the phrase. Lazyfaircoffee.com. Tristan's going to be like, what was that ad read? I'm not paying for that. L-A-Z-Y-F-A-I-R coffee.com. 1012, get you 10% off your order. Enjoy a really good cup of coffee this weekend.
What is it, the water boy? Where LT's like, and one more thing. Don't smoke crack.
It was the water boy. I was thinking of that, actually, during that, though. It was awesome.
Not with Damian Tomlinson, for you TCU fans.
Oh, yeah. I will always be sad that he didn't win a Super Bowl. I just damn. I wanted them to. Okay. So that's enough of last week, and that's enough. I'm sure TCU fans are like, we don't want to talk about it anymore. And that's fair. I wouldn't want to either. Like, I'm going to have a discussion about Mike Gundy here in the next couple of years. I can feel it coming. I can feel it in my bones. Speaking of Mike Gundy and Oklahoma State, we don't normally preview games, but when you have two games this big coming up the next weekend, then that's what we're going to do. Bedlam and Farmageddon, which, by the way, can we just officially call it Farmageddon? Can we just please make that an official thing that everyone says and has a cool trophy? We've talked about the trophy before. Make it Farmageddon. Jamie, you know what? We're going to talk Farmageddon first because I know you're itching and excited.
Wait, what's the trophy? Now you have me thinking.
We don't have one. What's
the trophy? What do you think
K-State fans want? We want a tractor that gets hauled back and forth between the campuses, and whoever wins gets to paint it.
Yeah, no, so like there actually
we've
was
been rallying
huge,
for it for
I was say there was a huge Reddit discussion I saw a few years ago where they literally were talking like someone had even offered to donate a tractor for this. Like, they literally wanted it to be like the largest trophy in college football history, as an actual tractor, like a combine.
Just riding
the tractor
on the field after you win. That would be amazing. You see them like awesome. Winning and then driving the tractor on the field. It's like March on Lynch.
It's going to have like a nice spot to like plant the flag so you can just drive off with it if you win.
See, I was all for just like a tractor turned into a life-size transformer, just parked immediately halfway between Iowa State's campus and Kansas State's campus, and you just flip the flag, whoever wins that year. And I don't care if it's next to a highway or in the middle of some farmer's field. Just like it has to be straight line, halfway there, some sideshow attraction to see the Farmageddon transformer. Plus, Farmageddon sounds like a transformer from the like later transformer where Michael Bay is just like, let's just make ideas. Something. Hey, about a tractor? Farmageddon. Done. Yes.
They ran out of ideas the first one, though.
Oh, God.
That's what I'm for. Okay, so Farmageddon. Iowa State, Kansas State meeting up in Ames, Iowa. Iowa State, obviously, 5-2 on the season. Just one loss in conference play. They literally control their own destiny, win out, and they're going to go to the Big 12 title game. You know, they could consider themselves in playoff contention if not for that loss to Louisiana, but we won't go there, Jamie, because I don't want to see you turn Iowa State red. They are facing a Kansas State team coming off of a very close loss to Oklahoma State right before the Idle Week. But this is a Kansas State team, back-to-back losses to OSU and West Virginia. Will Howard, now the starting quarterback, and they just haven't been the same. This is still a good defense, still a good West Virginia team, but it feels like without Skylar Thompson, they're just not quite the same. Meanwhile, Iowa State, a team that usually has success in October and then seems to see it trail off after, they lost to Oklahoma State. I understand it was wins over Kansas and Baylor, and how much can you really say over Kansas and Baylor, especially a Baylor team where you had to come back from a huge halftime deficit. But Iowa State's still winning, marching along. I am pumped for this game. What I'm really pumped for is that thank you, college football gods, for not putting Farmageddon and Bedlam on at the same time, because I would have been very angry. I'm excited to watch this. Jamie, as our resident Iowa State fan, why don't you take your thoughts on this matchup first?
Well, I feel a little bit better because the Baylor game is one of those games that we historically would have dropped. And so I don't feel as worried about doing something ridiculous like that. But to be in control of our own destiny atop the Big 12, this is heretofore uncharted territory as far as the Cyclones are concerned. We do not know what to do with ourselves. It's like in Talladega Nights when Ricky Bobby's getting interviewed for the first time and he doesn't know what to do with his hands. That's how I feel watching football all the time. I just don't know what to do with my hands. So, besides that, I feel great. I'm excited. I think it'll be a great game. I think it's a great game time. I haven't looked at the forecast up to Saturday, but it's actually supposed to warm up a little bit in Ames, which is great because it got real cold for a while there. But yeah, I don't know. I think it's a really good chance to either be able to say we've turned that corner where we can be great. Like sometimes there's years where we look like we could be great and it gets down to it and they just don't want to be great. But a win here, and you're one step closer to the championship game. You're one step closer to probably the best season in school history, which I wish I hadn't even said that because I can't even begin to like comprehend that either. But, yeah, there's a lot going on. But I still feel good about it, which maybe I shouldn't, but I do.
So I'm kind of disappointed. As many times as I've driven this, I'm disappointed I had to look it up. But the problem, Philip, with your idea is the middle between Manhattan and Ames is Missouri, somewhere in Missouri. So that's you can't do that. You can't have it in Missouri. That'd be ridiculous.
I mean, we're talking about a life-size tractor turned into a transformer as a trophy for a football game. I don't think ridiculous is really a concern in this situation.
No. You know what the obvious solution for that is then? You set up one side in Kansas, one side in Iowa, and whoever wins, you have to drive it from the other site to the correct site at that point. So to live in two different places, it just depends on who wins.
Some company did make one for this year that's like a silo, and it's just some small like ag company, and half of the silo, half the little trophy that's not approved by anyone is their company name. They just like really went for it, and we're like, here, we'll sponsor it. And they just made it. And obviously, neither school wants any part of it. But they were just like, here you go. No one asked us, but here's our contribution. It was incredible.
It's amazing. I mean, shoot your shot, right?
Exactly.
I think
100% of the shots you don't take.
Yeah, I mean, this is – I don't want to count Kansas State out because anytime I've done that, it seems like they bounce back. But, you know, look, Will Howard's an admirable job at quarterback given the circumstances. I think it would be a – man, would this be a big game if Skylar Thompson were still playing? I hate to say that because, man, what? How different would this year be for Kansas State if they had Skylar Thompson? But this game, holy cow, would this be – this game would be as big as Bedlam. I feel like if Skylar Thompson were available, just because of how much better they would be and more of a viable, legitimate contender. But, mm-hmm. you know, look, they scheme really well. They're a smart football team. I'm envious of Chris Klieman. He's a really smart, good head coach that's coaching a team that I don't like. So it sucks because I really like him. But, look, Iowa State, really good defensively and really smart defensively. So I think they're going to do a really good job scheming against the young quarterback in this game. This is a really good situation for you know, a John Haycock defense. So I like Iowa State in this game because of what they have and what they have on defense and how they can take advantage of Will Howard. But again, I hate counting out Kansas State because I did that when Will Howard came in and still in it.
Yeah, this seems oddly familiar to a conversation you and I had, Ari, over my podcast. But Kansas State is that team that right. you don't want to root for. Mainly right. because of allegiances, but that you can't help but actually kind of like what they're putting together there. And yeah, it's not there all the way yet, but you can see the building pieces. You can see that the head coach in Klieman is a really good head coach, and he just needs to get a few more pieces in there to turn this potentially into a consistent contender in the Big 12. I agree. I just don't think it's here yet. Interestingly enough, though, the top five teams in the Big 12 right now all technically all control their own destiny to be able to go to the Big 12 yeah. championship. So it is still a very crowded race. It is still going to be extremely difficult. But this week and, well, mainly this week is going to give us a much clearer picture of where we are in terms of who actually has a legitimate shot. If Kansas State pulls this win off, there is no reason to think that they can't run the table the rest of the way with who they're playing. And so, like, this is going to be the game for them that determines what their season is going to be overall. I do agree. I don't think the Kansas State's able to do it because as much as, you know, Will Howard has made a lot of strides in the last few weeks, but he still has very, very big issues, which is to be expected with a true freshman who is stepping in halfway through a season because the main guy got injured. And, you know, for all the problems that Iowa State's had on both offense and defense, I just think that they're still better than Kansas State. The question is going to be, does something weird happen, like seems to have happened every single week? One of these games every week in the Big 12 has something just weird happen that gives us a result that we weren't expecting. This could be the game for that. And I'm not confident enough. I think it's going to be a different game, but I'm not confident enough to say that something weird is not going to happen in this game.
So let me say a couple of things. We all think Kansas State has a good defense, and I believe they do. They do. And sometimes kind of total defense is the worst statistic to care about. But if we want to talk about overall stat stuff, passing defense, Kansas State is sixth in the Big 12 this year. Scoring defense, they are fourth in the Big 12. But here's where I think this game is going to come down to. Rushing defense, Kansas State 7th in the Big 12 this year, giving up 161 yards a game. And they are going up against the best running back in the Big 12 in Breece Hall. I think Will Howard's going to figure things out eventually. I think he looks like he might be a good quarterback. I think Kansas State's defense is going to play well. I think Brock Purdy will play better than he did against Baylor. But this game is going to be Breece Hall versus Kansas State. And if that's the matchup that I think is going to matter, then I have Iowa State winning this. And I don't think it's going to be that close, especially being on the road. You know, it's one thing, Oklahoma State, Kansas State, very close game. Oklahoma State lucky to get that win. Look, Oklahoma State's offensive line is beat up. But Kansas State in Manhattan, even with the transition to Klieman, there's still just magic in Manhattan. There is. There is a magical, I swear they buried some like 1984 Holiday Bowl windbreaker of Snyder's like somewhere in that stadium, and that thing's going to keep the magic going until it like the earth is salted. But
you with special teams and defense.
I'm guessing there's probably more than one.
If you, they
like a Horcrux.
They are the Horcruxes of Kansas State. If you can find them all and destroy them, Kansas State will go a whole season without returning returning a kick for a touchdown.
Otherwise, Voldemort eat kill. I mean, goes both ways.
Yeah.
Yeah. Also, Breece Hall is the best running back in the nation, by the way. Not just the Big 12.
Yeah,
he's the best running back in America.
And it's not fair. He is not getting the Heisman talk he deserves. I understand the Heisman's right. Quarterback award. The Heisman is we have to treat the Heisman with what it is. It's an overly regionally biased quarterback award.
He should get some mention, though. You're right.
But that he's barely even getting talked about.
Yeah.
I like Brock Purdy, but if Breece Hall's not the best running back in the country, Iowa State is not in the situation they are right now. Period. Done. End of story. Yep. Breece Hall is that good. Breece Hall is the reason that Iowa State is in the position they're in right now.
Look, if he wasn't the running back that he was, they might have lost to Kansas. Like, that's how, you know, how much of a difference or how big of an impact he's made that the rest of the team hasn't been phenomenal like we are used to seeing. Like, Brock Purdy has been nowhere near as good as we're used to seeing him. That game against Baylor, like, it's not that hard to have a better game than you had against Baylor. Just don't throw three picks. I mean, it's like,
Breece Hall has been like four more kick return for touchdowns away from winning that game.
Yeah.
But, like four more of them.
No, but I mean,
you're right.
It's one of those things.
He was a destroyer that game. I predicted before the game he'd have 200 yards, by the way. I predicted before that game he'd run for 200 on chances. He only went for 185.
Close enough.
Like, understand, he is the only running back in the nation who has 1,000 yards rushing. The only one. And they didn't play
still
this Saturday. They didn't play this week.
Right.
He didn't play. No one passed him. No one else hit 1,000. He is currently tied for 7th in the country at, like, nationally in scoring. That's how many points at 12 points per game. 7th. The mm-hmm. best is at 16. He is the best running back in the Big 12. He is going to be the Big 12 Offensive Player of the Year. I don't care. I get it. We can talk about Spencer Rattler all day. Breece Hall is the Big 12 Offensive Player of the Year. It's decided. Unless he, like, breaks his ankle this week and doesn't play the rest of the season, he is. And
knock on wood.
Yeah. And
seriously.
And frankly, he should be getting more Heisman buzz. But he is the reason. Look, I think the line is Iowa State minus 10 is what it opened with, is what I saw. That might be a little bit high. But on the road, in Ames, I like Kansas State, and Klieman is so good. And Klieman was the best hire of the four. And I like Neil Brown, but Klieman was the best hire of the four 2 years ago. And Kansas State's moving in the right direction with him. But this is just not their year. It's not their year. It's not. And I think I am more comfortable picking the outcome of Bedlam than I am this game, but I still feel pretty comfortable about Iowa State.
Fair.
Cricket.
Not sure what else there is to say about that.
I'm either really good at making points that no one can disagree with, or everyone's just like, whatever.
Now, honestly, I think it's because everybody else has already talked about the game, so there's really not much left to say.
That's fine. We can
move about
on.
This particular game, right. But that's okay.
Well, we have one more big game.
You know, we're all just right. I know. Let's go, Kansas, Texas. Let's do it. I mean, come on. I've been hyping this game up all year long, Philip, since before the offseason even started. You've got to give me
the
this.
Timer.
I know. He's setting the timer. He told me I had 1 minute to talk about this game.
If this were a TV show, we'd have a beautiful graphic for it, too.
Oh, I know. It would be absolutely fantastic.
We'd have somebody holding a stopwatch that they found in their gym bag from, like, the 90s up to a screen. So I have my phone here.
We would not have a Jayhawk pointing down, though. You see, Andy, your Jayhawk is pointing to the south like he's going down.
Well.
No, he's getting ready to dive bomb that Texas defense.
Like the Chicago White Sox who had a guaranteed right field with an arrow pointing down.
Oh, gosh. Oh, yes, I remember that. That was so ridiculous. But no, so this
right,
game
ready?
Here.
We'll put it, we're going to start. Ready?
Okay, you fine.
Officially
fine.
On
you can go
clock.
Ahead and time me. All right, so this game, look, I realize that everybody thinks I'm delusional, but We saw this last year. Kansas coming out of a bye. Okay. Brent Dearman having an opportunity to game plan. Everybody thought that the Kansas offense was going absolutely nowhere. Okay. Offensive line was having some issues last year as well.
This counts, by the way. The timer keeps moving. This counts.
This is not a good sign for Kansas that Andy's.
This is actually Andy making a pretty good argument for Kansas to beat Texas right now. This.
In podcast land, Andy froze, which is just the perfect sign for what's going to happen to Kansas on Saturday.
Also, you can only see his face right now on what he's frozen on.
Yep. And that's it.
He was ready to make some really good points, too.
What I'll add to this, if we're not going to edit this.
No, we're not. This is too good. It's too good.
Is maybe if Kansas didn't almost beat them last year, like there's just no way. Okay, we got Andy back. You lost your minute, Andy. You froze for 30 seconds.
Oh no, it's all here in my recording. So when Philip gets my audio, it will all be there.
I'm not going to use that.
Oh yes, you will.
Because
if you don't, I will find you.
It was so
you
much
freezing midway through.
It was so much funnier this way. Okay, so
and a screenshot of it too.
Did you? I'm going to need that because I'm going to have to tweet it out tomorrow. That's literally going to be the image
that
goes.
My internet gave out, the episode. Which tells me that my internet decided that what I was saying was absolutely ridiculous as well, and it didn't want me to be able to finish it for you
we
guys.
Agree.
So.
We agree. We all agree. And maybe if they didn't almost beat them last year, you could maybe surprise them. But the fact that that happened last year, like they're going to be even more ready. And they, I mean, they're playing like a team that figures, knows what's at stake. I mean, you've watched this team, Andy, for more than 5 minutes. Daniels is going to be good.
No,
they
what
I have an offensive line and some semblance of anything on offense and defense.
What I have watched is the fact that the refs really want Texas to be good this year. And so the last two games they played, they have been absolutely saved. Yeah, exactly. The refs have absolutely saved Texas in the last two games that they had. I don't think they're going to need it against Kansas, honestly, if I'm being objective for this game. But I've got to have something. I got to give myself something this year. And this is the one that I've been holding on to all year long. I am not going to give it up until Kansas is down by 4 touchdowns in the middle of the fourth quarter.
I've decided that because you have been on this train for so long, or mine cart, or whatever you want to say, like you've been saying this for so long, there has to be some recourse when Kansas doesn't win. Like you can't be this adamant about it for this long and have no and just be like, well, I was wrong, on to the next big theory that I'm gonna hammer for another year and be wrong about. Like there has to be recourse to win.
I
Texas
already said
wins.
That if I'm wrong, I'm just gonna pretend like the last 6 months didn't happen when it comes to this game. So
that's not we'll do something. I've decided.
Okay. We'll figure something out. I'm sure we will.
So to backtrack to Iowa State, if you're an Iowa State fan, not only do you have Farmageddon this Saturday, you have another huge matchup if you get past this one and Texas escapes Kansas against Texas the following Friday. So Iowa State's got back-to-back huge games. And you know what? A really good way to be able to sit down and watch those games and cheer is with a fantastic Iowa State shirt from Homefield Apparel. Vintage, thoroughly researched, awesome, very comfortable college apparel. They've got more than 100 schools available now, including Baylor and Iowa State. Look, if you aren't following them, if you haven't read the article on The Athletic about their story, if you haven't listened to our interview with Connor earlier this season, if you haven't gone to their website, if you haven't followed them on Twitter, first off, are you new to the show? Because we've been talking about them for a while, and I don't know how many times I have to say that they're awesome before you go check them out for yourself. These are people who care about college athletics, care about digging into the past of schools to find the coolest looking logos and designs to put on t-shirts and hoodies and sweaters. Okay. But I have an Iowa State shirt because it's awesome. I have a Rolling Rock shirt because it's awesome. I'm going to buy more. I'm going to buy a Memphis State shirt because I live near Memphis and it's kind of fun. And I'm half tempted to buy a Delaware shirt because it's the Blue Hens and they're awesome. Go to Homefield Apparel.
I feel like we all need an Indiana shirt as well.
I mean, but in honor of the fact that they're huge Indiana fans and 9 Windiana is still in play so far, Also, they have the Tulane, like, Green Wave, if you want that logo, which is probably one of the coolest retro logos in all of college sports, period. They have that one. Homefieldapparel.com. Promo code 1012, all cap TEN12, get 20% off your first order. All orders of $50 or more are free shipping. And because I don't know who's going to go there and be like, I'm just going to hold myself to one shirt. Bull, I don't believe you. I don't think you're a real person. You're obviously a bot. And there's 1,200 more of you repeating that exact same message. So homefieldapparel.com, 1012, get you 20% off for your first order. Be rocking some awesome, comfortable, vintage sports apparel this weekend, especially Iowa State fans. You guys really, 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 I know you, I have Iowa State fans who listen to the show. I see where all my plays come from, state of Iowa. You guys need to go.
See, it would have been a perfect punishment for me to make me buy a Texas shirt if they had, you know, won this weekend, except unfortunately Home Field Apparel does not have Texas yet. So maybe instead I will just have to buy my wife multiple Rice Owl, you know, hoodies.
What other schools do you not like? Ooh, I should make you buy an Iowa shirt. No, we're going to do a deal with Jamie if on the Sherry's Eyes Iowa shirts. We've already had that conversation. Okay. let's talk about...
Make him buy a Bucknell shirt.
But that would be awesome.
Oh, no. Don't make me do that.
Ooh, that's good. Oh, Ari, you're a gem. Okay. If you lose, you're buying a Bucknell shirt.
I don't know. We'll have to have that discussion.
Basically a traitor at this point to Andy. I'm sorry, Andy.
Yeah, we'll see.
Do you have to get the orange one with the bison on it? Like, not the bee, like, you got to get the orange one with the bison. I'm just going to go back and find...
That may be a little too harsh.
I'm going to go back and find all the other schools that Kansas got upset by in the tournament and see who else they have. This is going to be a fun side.
They lost to Bradley and Bucknell in back-to-back years.
Ooh, I'm pretty sure they have Bradley.
Seriously.
They have Bradley. Yes, they have Bradley and Bucknell.
4 years... Two of the 4 years I attended Kansas, they lost in the first round. They lost in the national championship game my senior year of high school to Carmelo Anthony and Jerry McNamara, and then they won the national championship they gave the year after I graduated.
Yeah, hey, wait a minute. Are you sure you're not reading off my life story? Because that's the exact same thing happened to me.
It's almost like we went to school at the same time.
Yeah, well, yeah, exactly.
All right, so I'm going to let you guys just reminisce about K-State. Sad days. Oh, they do have Bradley and Bucknell.
Oh, that's funny. That's a good one.
Okay.
That's a good one.
Thank you. Oklahoma State, Oklahoma. Bedlam on Saturday night, 6:30 ABC. Game day is headed to Norman for the first time in a very long time. I can read you a whole lot of stats that tell you that Oklahoma has dominated the series. The win-loss record should tell you that. I can tell you about how Oklahoma State's only won one game with game day in town, and that would actually be a 2013 game over Baylor. I can read you this great stat that I think matters the most for this weekend. This one coming from Caden McFarland, so props to him. In the last 12 games, only one Oklahoma State opponent has averaged more than 6 yards per play against the Cowboys defense, and only one has scored 4 or more offensive touchdowns in regulation. That would be Oklahoma with both of those stats. So even during Oklahoma State's fantastic run on defense, and that really started last year against Iowa State and has continued in through this season, one team has been able to still put up points and yards against them, and that's Oklahoma. Look, this is not the Oklahoma from the start of the year. This is an Oklahoma team that is healthy. This is an Oklahoma team with an offensive line that is healthy, a Spencer Rattler who is playing better and better and better, and a team with its suspended players back, including Armonde Stevenson, who has been a huge thing for them. And I understand who Oklahoma has played since those players came back in Texas Tech and Kansas. I get that. But the Oklahoma at the beginning of the season would have struggled with Texas Tech and maybe, well, no, not Kansas, but with Texas Tech. They trounced Texas Tech on the road. They trounced Kansas and could have done it by more. This is the Kansas Oklahoma we expect to see. And now they look like this. And they get to face an Oklahoma State team who, while they have a really good defense, have a beat-up offensive line. And a quarterback in Spencer Sanders who seems to have a problem turning the ball over. And yes, he didn't have a turnover against Kansas State, but I could also point to opportunities for Kansas State to gain turnovers where they failed to do so. And that's not because Spencer Sanders played a good game. It's because Kansas State just failed to force those turnovers. I am an Oklahoma State fan at heart. We have talked about this on the show ad nauseum. And I have a simple rule I've established since the end of last year. Oklahoma is going to win this game. I will not predict Oklahoma State to win a Bedlam game. I don't mean that as a narcissist or as a pessimist or a negative individual, simply because I know history. I've done this before, and I will not allow my hopes to get up. And there's no reason, based off what we've seen from the two teams over the last couple weeks, to believe that Oklahoma State's going to beat Oklahoma this year in Bedlam.
I mean, I have a hard time arguing with any of that, except for the fact that I still refuse to believe that Oklahoma's going to make it to the Big 12 championship, and they have to lose this game for that to happen. So, look, I am going to carry over my obnoxious, you know, unrealism from the Kansas-Texas game over to this game as well, and I realize that Oklahoma is favored in this game. They should be favored in this game. The only thing that concerns me, though, if I'm an Oklahoma fan, is that I'm not really sure what's been going on. I mean, in that game against Kansas, you know, he left Spencer Rattler in there, who was clearly injured against Kansas for whatever reason, and didn't really need to do it. So that could be, you could read that one of two ways. Either not really understanding the situation and not really be able to do what's in the best interest of a team, or having an absolute killer instinct and not really wanting to give up at any point and pull Rattler out. Even though, I mean, the problem is you could really make an argument either way on there. I'm just concerned in general. The fact that Rattler was in that game for as long as he was when he was clearly injured and having trouble planting. I don't know what that is actually going to translate into in this game against Oklahoma State. But I mean, I agree with you. It's definitely a good thing to be concerned about this game, but I don't know. I get the feeling that this is the game where they lean on Chuba Hubbard. And the one thing that Oklahoma has not been able to do is shut down running games consistently for teams that actually have good running games. And so This is kind of the only hope that I can cling on to, hoping beyond all hope that Oklahoma State's going to win this game, is the fact that they have, you know, they have a good running game. They have two running backs that can do very good things here. You don't want to get into a shootout with this Oklahoma team, but I think that Oklahoma State can avoid that, can slow them down enough to keep this from being a, you know, 60 to 50 game or something like that.
Jamie, go ahead.
Well, we'll say that it's because we're recording a little bit later that I do not have the energy to yell at the camera about my picks for the Big 12 championship game. We'll save that for maybe a later. Honestly, I probably should have drank some Lazy Fair coffee or something to get that energy, because after this week, I may not be able to yell about that anymore. However, man, I don't know. I feel like I still don't see Oklahoma as a completely different team from the beginning of the year. I think they're a significantly better team than the beginning of the year. I don't know that I'm ready to say that far and away they're my winners on the weekend. I think that there's plenty of things that could happen that makes Oklahoma State win this game. Do I think that it's more likely that Oklahoma wins? Sure. Which, technically, does that mean that I'm picking Oklahoma? Yes. However, I don't know. Part of it is just wishful thinking, that I would love to have a season where Oklahoma isn't at the top of everything again. But at the same time, I do still think that Oklahoma State has even more potential than they've shown in some of these games. I think that some of their players are better than they've been playing. I think that Chuba Hubbard's a heck of a lot better. And he's played in some of these games. And so would I love to see that happen? Absolutely. Do I think that for sure it will? I don't know. But either way, I think it's going to be a heck of a game. Very non-committal.
Yeah. I mean, and look, as somebody that roots for dominance in college basketball in the Big 12, I'm okay with dominance in football in the Big 12 too. So, I mean, Kansas and Oklahoma, I'm fine with what they have going on in basketball and football. Just to throw Kansas in here in some way in a positive light. I do kind of generally feel that way too. Like I'm okay rooting for Oklahoma. I don't know why. I also like Lincoln Riley a lot. I do agree with Jamie that this is a game that's gonna live up to the billing. Like, I think this is gonna be a really good game. I just don't see a way this doesn't come down to the end. Andy, great point about the run game, because I look at this game, the first thing I looked at was how good Oklahoma's defensive line has played of late. And now I'm concerned about Spencer Sanders and interceptions and turnovers and sacks against, as Philip, as you mentioned, the Oklahoma State offensive line. So that, I mean, that's a weird, I mean, is Oklahoma State going to be able to run the football, and are they going to stick to it? You know, and we'll see if they kind of remain consistent in trying to get the ground game going in this game. But yeah, I mean, Oklahoma's changed. Their defensive front is really good. It's come on. I mean, they're the number one defensive front, I think, in the Big 12, maybe next to West Virginia is, but they haven't played yet. But I mean, I think they're number one in sacks, number two in tackles for loss. They're just disruptive. And then, yeah, offensively with Rhamondre Stevenson, this is a different offense because they need to run the football to be effective, and they could not run the ball at the beginning of the year, and that's why they lost, period. They cannot run Lincoln Riley's offense effectively without running the ball, period. And they couldn't do that at the beginning of the year. And that's why they lost the games they lost. So they started to run the ball a little bit better down the stretch, but then getting Stevenson back is just – it's exactly what they needed. So I saw the line was like 9 at this. It opened at 9. So it seems kind of outrageous. But I also kind of think those, you know, Oklahoma's trending up, and Oklahoma State just turns the ball over too much. We know that, you know, and that's the, if they can run the ball, as Andy said, they'll be good. But if they don't stay with it and they get sacked and Sanders turns the ball over because they're getting after the quarterback, that's where I see this game getting out of hand potentially.
The other thing to keep in mind here, the games that they lost, it wasn't just that they weren't able to run the ball effectively. It's that the opponents made very good coaching decisions late in those games. And for whatever reason, Oklahoma, like they usually do, this time they were not able to adjust. And that makes you wonder what is going on coaching-wise. Was that an early in the year type of thing? And we're not going to see those anymore. That's why, you know, that Kansas game was so concerning to me as an Oklahoma, like from an Oklahoma lens, is that there was some questionable coaching there that makes you wonder, are they completely over that from the beginning of the year, or are they just that dominant in the last few weeks because of who they were playing? And so that's what makes me like this Oklahoma State team is fairly close in terms of talent overall. You know, I mean, there is definitely spots where Oklahoma is much better, but there are spots where Oklahoma State is talent-wise much better than Oklahoma at certain matchups. And so, like, overall, this is much more, like, those little things can matter. If Lincoln Riley makes a poor coaching decision late in this game, you know, like, we all know how much Gundy does that as well, but, like, I could actually see maybe that there's a coaching mistake by Lincoln Riley that we're not used to him seeing that could be the decision in this game. I don't know that I would have said that if we hadn't seen what we saw last time against Kansas, or if we hadn't seen what happened against Kansas State and Iowa State, where he wasn't just running everything up and down, you know. And I mean, I think a big part of that was the fact that he had senior quarterbacks the last few years. If he made any of those kind of mistakes, those quarterbacks could kind of cover over it and do what they needed to do to make that work. They don't have that this year, and I don't think that Spencer Rattler is far enough along in his progression to be able to paper over any potential mistakes that Lincoln Riley might make coaching in this game. And so, again, I think that's just something to keep in mind, that this game could be a lot closer than a lot of people think it is, because we have actually seen some quote-unquote mistakes from Lincoln Riley in the way that he's coached these games this year, and it's caused losses for them.
So, to 2 points. Ari, yes, Oklahoma leads the conference in sacks at 3.71 a game. Andy, to your point about teams not being able to run as much on Oklahoma, Oklahoma leads the conference in rushing defense, holding teams to an average of 98.6 yards. Only two people have rushed for more than 100 yards on Oklahoma: Breece Hall and Sam Ehlinger. No other running back, quarterback, no one else has rushed for 100 yards on Oklahoma. The only other team that I can find that did was Texas Tech, who put up 134 yards. Four guys to do it. This is a good rushing defense. So if I'm Oklahoma, I'm going to shut down Chuba Hubbard and make Spencer Sanders beat me. The other thing I will note, along with the other things improving, the Oklahoma offensive line. Oklahoma always has stellar offensive lines. Fantastic. It wasn't great at the start of the season. It wasn't. It's playing a lot better now. And I would bet, I would put a large amount of my daughter's college savings on that position group that was essentially wiped out by COVID that Lincoln Riley wouldn't name at the beginning of the season. I would put a good deal of money on that being the offensive line group and in explaining why they were playing so poor at the end of the season. And at this point, because now that they're all healthy and caught back up, they're playing really well again. So that's another thing that goes in Oklahoma's favor. I've been saying Oklahoma, Iowa State in the Big 12 title game for a few weeks. You guys continue to tell me no, no, no. I understand you don't want to hear it. But I mean, the only way that doesn't happen is if it's Oklahoma and Texas because Texas beats Iowa State. And that's, I don't think anybody really wants to watch that again because I'm tired of the national guys being like, oh, that Red River game that was amazing. Just because a game goes four overtimes doesn't mean it was a good game. It was just a game that lasted forever. It was not a good game. But I think Oklahoma's there. I don't see Oklahoma beating Oklahoma State this weekend. I think it could be a close game. I think it will be a good game. I don't think Oklahoma's going to lose to Oklahoma State here because Oklahoma knows how much they now have in front of them and can do. And then after that, it's a road game at West Virginia and a home game against Baylor. And that road game against West Virginia could be really good. It could be a good game. It's a really good defense in West Virginia. I don't think West Virginia could score enough to keep up with Oklahoma. And no defense at this point is going to shut Oklahoma down. So I think just go ahead and ride Oklahoma in the Big 12 title game. And if I'm wrong, I will be happy to be wrong, but I don't think I'm going to be.
Here's hoping.
But Ari's all like, yeah, cool. Go for OU. And that's fine. Like, I get it. They're good. And when they're good, it's fun to watch good teams win. Like, I understand that. This is a Big 12 podcast. I don't have a problem with Oklahoma winning if they're the best team. Do I like some variety every once in a while?
Sure.
Yeah. And some variety would be fun. Oklahoma, Texas this year, when neither one has seemed especially good, is kind of like, it's one thing when you're getting really good Oklahoma and really good Texas and you get really good games. That's fine. I'm all for it. When neither of those teams is especially great, but no one else can get there, then that's what we get. But it would be fun to see a good Iowa State and a good Oklahoma State team just for some variety. But, you know, the two best teams at this point are going to get there, and the best team so at this point in the season looks to be Oklahoma, and then whoever wins the Iowa State-Texas game in 2 weeks.
Well, and look, you're 100% correct, and I agree with that. And what I will say is people that are surprised about Oklahoma State or Iowa State being in the conversation haven't paid attention to the Big 12 because especially Oklahoma State, this was supposed to be the year, right? I mean, and their defense has lived up to the billing. My goodness, their defense is the year in which Big 12 defenses are really good. Oklahoma State's probably is the best in the conference and has the most depth and is going to be good again next year. So, yeah, no, I would say if we're trying to get the best football, you know, we're trying to see the best players and the best teams compete at the highest level, which is the Big 12 championship. I would put Oklahoma State in that mix for sure. And Iowa State too. Again, this shouldn't be a surprise that those two teams in particular are here where they are because they were experienced and good coming into the season.
All right. Well, if nobody else has any thoughts, unfortunately, Andy's done talking about Kansas beating Texas, which isn't going to happen. So just whatever, man. Andy, I love having you on the show. I do. And you're as fun as it can be. And I will tolerate a lot of things, but that insanity has to end and will finally end after this Saturday. And
okay, I love you, man. What is the main responsibility we have on this podcast? It's to entertain people. So I am more than willing to be the heel that is needed for this podcast to be entertaining.
Andy is thankfully the character who's tying helpless women to a train tracks with the train upcoming. That's his role on the show, complete with giant mustache that you can't see him twirling.
No. That would be more like if I tied myself to the train tracks, thoroughly convinced that I was going to find a way to miraculously escape for everyone's entertainment. Because let me tell you, if Kansas loses by 4 touchdowns, the only person who's going to hurt is me.
No, I'm not going to hurt. We're going to find a way to make you.
The only person who's going to hurt is me, poor random person that's been tied to a railroad track.
All right, I think we'll wrap because this is officially like our longest pod ever, and I'm fine with that. Whatever, because it's a fun one. Thank you to everybody here as always. Go follow Ari at Ari Sports. And if you are a SiriusXM subscriber, you can get Big 12 Radio on channel 375 on channel.
If you're not, should be a SiriusXM subscriber.
Definitely.
Because I mean, you should.
There's lots of great content. And radio companies are really poorly run and they're firing people left and right. My buddy Chip Brown just lost a show from iHeartRadio in Austin, Texas. They just got rid of that show. So support good programming and support companies that continue to support good programming like SiriusXM, because there are a lot of bad and poorly run radio companies out there. Shout out iHeartRadio.
There you go. So Big 12 Radio at channel 375 and channel 84 for ESPNU if you want to go hear Ari there. He also talks about the Dallas Cowboys, but I'm not going to plug that. Sorry, Ari. Jamie, follow her on Twitter at jsteyz, J-S-T-E-Y-Z, if you want some cool arts and crafts things. And I'm kidding.
Basketball.
Football. And
I think.
There you go. There it is.
Yeah, there we go.
And Andy at AndyMitts12. That's M-I-T-T-S. Of course, you can follow us, the 1012 Podcast, T-E-N, the number 12, the word podcast on Twitter, T-E-N, the number 12, P-O-D on Instagram, where we post exclusive content and have Wednesday Instagram Lives with guests who are always TBD until about 5 minutes beforehand. And of course, leave us a rating and review. So if you hate Andy, you can tell us that, but tell us you love the show. It's just like 5 stars, but I hate Andy. That's fine. I would be happy to read that, and we'll read it here live on the show for you. Hit up Homefield Apparel, homefieldapparel.com. 1012 gets you 20% off your first order. Lazy Fair Coffee. There's no crack there, just coffee. You get 10% off your order there with the promo code 1012. Everybody enjoy Farmageddon. Enjoy Bedlam. Enjoy Texas curb stomping Kansas this weekend. And I will be back on Thursday to make picks.